tweet at TodaySOR.
Time now for our Friday gathering. The panel is with me in studio, but first listen back to get a flavour of the big stories of the past week.
And welcome to the first show on Radio 2. Yeah, well, we've been waiting for an all-day nationwide music station for a long time. Now we have it. We're going to bring you 19 and a half hours of the best sounds every day. Music for everyone. Our first disc comes from the five Dublin lads who took the international scene by storm and proved an Irish group could top the British charts. Yes, indeed, the Boomtown Rats. Like clockwork, lads.
It's hard to imagine this building without Larry. He was just one of these people who had this big heart and was just the warmest of men. And music was his life. He loved music. It was that was the hobby, that was the job, that was the joy.
I'm very disappointed and changed my mind because I felt in the circumstances there wasn't an appropriate level of inclusivity.
This had become a political football. The whole point of looking at these formal state events is that they can be dignified, and this was shaping up to be anything but.
Crazy Trump, don't think that everything is over with my father's martyrdom. My father had a father who stood by his side, and we too, like our father, will stand by him.
Your campaign of terror, murder, mayhem will not be tolerated any longer.
Taoiseach and Micheál Martin hold constructive meeting as election speculation gathers pace.
I think if you talk to anybody in this House, everybody agrees that the lifespan of this Dáil has run its course.
I think we can survive until after the Easter break, and I'd be very confident that we can do that because we have a team of people in there that want to get a job done.
Some people will tell you there's never a good time for an election. Other people like me, sure, I'll fight an election any day of the week because I love them. The buzz, the vibe, the meeting the people, love them.
And that compilation was assembled by my colleague Niamh Lyons. With me in studio, John Downing, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, Gerard Howland, public affairs consultant and Irish Examiner columnist, also former Fianna Fáil government advisor, and making up our fourth contributor, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fine Gael and the party spokesperson on health. Well, Louise O'Reilly, we haven't heard from Sinn Féin about that paper published jointly by the two government ministers last night at Stormont. Will Sinn Féin be in there?
Well, you won't hear from Sinn Féin until the Ard Coral has had a chance to meet and consider it. And I think, you know, Arlene Foster said it this morning on Morning Ireland that, you know, there are internal processes that have to take place. They have to be given time. My understanding is the Ard Coral is going to meet in Belfast this afternoon, and then as soon as they have had a chance to consider the document and to come to a decision, they will at that stage make an announcement, and it'll be known to everybody, me included. But as it stands now, the document's under consideration, and I think it's there's enough time for enough time has to be allowed for consideration to take place.
Whatever about Monday, John, it seems like we won't see Stormont reconvening or reopening today.
Less likely. I've just been corrected by Louise out there. 32 members of the Ard Coral coming from all. I thought there were more, but coming from every corner of the country, and it's going to have to take a bit of time. We've waited 3 years. Whether it's this afternoon or Monday, I do hope it will happen. It looks particularly on the language issue, which is very dear to my heart. It looks like, yes, a workable compromise.
And I see just a tweet from Hugh O'Connell, one of your colleagues in The Independent, saying, he's quoting the Taoiseach as saying in the last couple of minutes, real chance the Assembly will be up and running again by Monday. The Taoiseach says he spoke with Mary Lou McDonald this morning. What are your expectations, Gerard Howland?
They're very positive, but it's never over in Northern Ireland until it's done. So don't count the chicken until it's hatched. But I suppose there's really good reasons for both main parties in Northern Ireland wanting to do this. If not, there's an election, which neither might prosper to the degree they did in the last election. And there's also the complicating factor of perhaps an imminent election here, which would be an impetus for Sinn Féin, but more particularly, I think, for the DUP. If the DUP do not go back in, I think they have more problems than anyone else. So the balance for them is to go in, one would imagine.
Kate O'Connell, is that your expectation?
Yeah, we would be very hopeful that Stormont would get back up and running early next week. But that said, it's a very considered document. It's a long document, and it gives something to everyone. And the Taoiseach was very clear last night that it took longer than he'd anticipated, and there were bumps along the road. But it, like that, we're down here commenting on Northern Ireland. Taoiseach last night said the best place for Northern Ireland to be governed from is Northern Ireland. And, you know, it's up to Sinn Féin now today to meet and consider. I wouldn't like to tell them what direction they should be going in. And like the DUP, I heard one of their members on this morning speaking in a positive way. But like that, within organisations, there will be differences of opinion. But this has been a long road. There's a mature process that has been gone through. There is, I think, agreement on both sides that some change has to happen. And after the last 3 years of uncertainty, I think there is kind of a light at the end of the tunnel.
Is it a good time now, do you think, Gerard Howland, for the government to say, right, look, let's have the election? They're going through the motions of having these meetings with Micheál Martin. They talk about words like constructive and cordial, which I think maybe has some people maybe reaching for their overcoat, thinking the show is over, if that's the kind of language they're using.
No, I don't think the show is over, and I don't believe the Taoiseach's made up his mind. He'd be foolish if he had, by the way. I think there are several events, I think, to play out over the coming days. First of all, to wait and see for sure what's happened in Northern Ireland. I suppose to listen to his parliamentary party, which is meeting this afternoon. But you've got to remember about the Leinster House bubble, and particularly about parliamentary parties. The interests of a parliamentary party and a Taoiseach are not coincidental. The interests of a parliamentary party is about the re-election of incumbents. The interest of a Taoiseach is about electing candidates who are not yet TDs. And that tension between a Taoiseach and his sitting TDs shouldn't be underestimated. Their interests are not his, and his interests are not theirs completely.
I think it's something that's been unspoken that I've been picking up across all parties, by the way. Incumbency is a great determinant of who's going to be. In other words, an outgoing TD has a cracking chance of being a new TD next time out. And some people have been quietly saying, look, let's have it sooner rather than later, because why should I be allowing the rivals to get their legs under them and prepare? Let's have a short, sharp shock. I know how to do it.
And there are several constituencies for Fine Gael where, particularly Waterford, Sligo, Roscommon, where they need, I would suggest, a little more time for those candidates who are not yet TDs.
Do you have a sense of the mood in your party, Kate O'Connell, as to what the backbenchers would like to see happening?
Well, there's mixed views, but at the end of the day, we are the main party of government, and our focus is on the really important issues. We need to get that withdrawal agreement ratified fully through the House of Parliament. We need to make sure Stormont doesn't fall at the last hurdle. We have very important business to be conducting. There is good economic forecasts. There's money in the pot to be spent. But like that, what backbenchers do, I'm happy for there to be an election whenever it's called. I don't see any argument that there will be a short, sharp shock. We have had the constant threat of an election for 4 years now. So anybody that's not election ready at this stage, it's really kind of their own fault at this stage. But like that, our focus is on running the country, and we hope to be able to return a majority where we have a mandate to govern and to not have our policies diluted through a competence and supply arrangement.
Louise O'Reilly, is there a case for what Fianna Fáil describe as the orderly wind down, put a few more important pieces of legislation through and then do it at Easter?
I think this government has run out a road. I don't think there's any energy or enthusiasm for continuing. I think that it's time really to let the people have their say. I know certainly canvassing is something I do, on a very regular daily, weekly basis. And I know I'm going to be joined on the doors soon by people from other parties, and that's very welcome. But the overwhelming sense from people when you knock on their doors is one of absolute frustration. Frustration with the numbers of people in emergency accommodation and the fact that that number is climbing. Frustration with the number of people on trolleys that we saw another record broken. October was a record-breaking month. Trolley waste up 9% last year. Frustration with the spin and the attempt to deflect by the government. And I think that people do want to have their say. I think they deserve to have their say. And I think the election will come sooner rather than later. And this idea that Micheál Martin and Leo will meet and they will agree and they will attempt, you know, Micheál will attempt to do what he has been doing, which is, you know, to control both government and opposition and to pretend to be in government and be in opposition. That, I mean, that can't continue. I don't think anyone wants it to.
Rural TDs have a chance now, that rural grouping, Gerard Howland, to put down a no confidence motion in Simon Harris. Not entirely surprised, or nobody's surprised by that. But again, how confident could the government be of surviving it?
Well, two things about it. I mean, I understand from those seven TDs that they themselves haven't met about this face-to-face. So they're bandying about a motion of no confidence, the single most significant parliamentary act in their arsenal, and they haven't met, which I think puts in context the seriousness of the strategy as distinct from the opportunism of the tactics. In relation to the government, I think it is surprising that the Taoiseach is saying he will go and talk in the future tense to some of these people or others in the Dáil who are not currently supporting the government. And there's two aspects of the Taoiseach. One is as the head of government, the other is party leader. As head of government, I have a sense that there is a man with a plan who, like it or lump it, has a very clear idea of what he wants for himself and the country. As party leader, I'm looking at somebody who seems less assured about managing the lever of political mechanics to get him where he needs to go. Is it true that he hasn't been talking to these people on an ongoing basis? Hitherto, it would seem so, which, given the number situation in the Dáil, is an extraordinarily mistake.
Yeah, John, again, it was something that Bertie Ahern certainly was most attentive about, belt braces and bailer twine.
Yes, absolutely. And even in his second, or his 2002-2007 government, when he had numbers, he was still tic-tacking with the spare tyre, it was called. He was still tic-tacking with the gene pool to keep to keep his options open. Yeah, I think I think Bertie Ahern showed a greater ability to do coalition and do consensus politics and keep people on side.
Something else we've been observing during the week is the unravelling of the government's plan to commemorate the contribution of members of the RIC also, I think, the Dublin Metropolitan Police. Now, it seems to have been fallen asunder in some disarray because essentially Kate O'Connell, Charlie Flanagan didn't do proper and full and extensive consultation across the political divide.
That's part of it. It just may have been just the wrong time or perhaps too soon for people to have a commemoration like this. And the minister was very clear it wasn't a celebration. It was a marking of a period in our history. But I completely understand why many people from my own party and from other parties and friends of mine with no particular political affiliation contacted me and were very, very hurt about the commemoration. I'd like to see it happen, though, a form of it. As you probably know, my great-grandfather was a member of the DMP, a sergeant in Dunleary, and my grandfather fought on the British side. And my point is that when my grandfather left to fight in the First World War on the British side, that was the right side. And when he came back, it was the wrong side. And all of our histories are intertwined with a tapestry. I was brought up in a fiercely Republican Fine Gael household, if perhaps Louise mightn't be able to, that sort of thing exists, but it does exist. And I'm very proud of my history and it has formed what I am today. And there are many people like me in the country. But I think there is something wider at play here. There is a simmering nationalism, I think, globally. The Make America Great Again, take back control, the movies in the UK leading up to Brexit. And there is a certain amount of that within our own country as well. And I think perhaps we misread it and we need to be more sympathetic in the future to the wounds that people still have. And as I said, 100 years isn't that long ago. There are people that benefited financially in terms of jobs out of the state that was formed. And those families still, I suppose, to some extent, have the benefits of that. And some people are very sore about that in the past. But to move on like we are in Northern Ireland today, we have to remember our past, consider it, but also not look at things, in my view, in a binary way. Who won, who lost, who was right, who was wrong, who started out in a particular position, and what are we all for in the end? Are we not all for a sovereign state that is good to its people and that we live in a safe and secure society?
Some people, Louise O'Reilly, for genuine or political reasons, jumped on this proposal, describing it as a way of honouring the black and tans, which the minister and the government insisted it was by no means the intention there. Now, do you think that there's a way pardon me, to honour the contribution to Ireland of members of the Royal Irish Constabulary in a way that, you know, doesn't cause this kind of division and rancour that we've seen in the last week.
I'm not sure that there is, but to be honest with you, and I don't think there's a way of decoupling the OIC from the Black and Tans and the Auxiliaries, and certainly that's the message that I got. I was quite taken aback at the extent and the depth of the feeling and the number of contacts that I would have had into the office, or even someone just stopping me in SuperValu when I was getting my messages. People just, there was a very, very, there was a very deep feeling about it. And I think that's what the government misjudged. I think they misjudged the lack of public support for such a commemoration. But let's not forget, you know, there is an all-party advisory, I think it's called, an all-party Oireachtas committee on commemorations. There's also an expert advisory group. So, I mean, perhaps they are the people who should be consulted in terms of the appropriateness. But I don't believe that it is appropriate for us. Certainly as a trade unionist, I would be very uncomfortable with commemorating the DMP because of their role in the lockout, and as a Republican, I would have serious reservations about commemoration. Yeah, but that's not to say let me finish. That's not to say that there isn't space for an educational event, because I don't think we should forget our history. I think our history is extremely important, but a commemoration, I don't think, is something
an educational event, and maybe with a wreath laying ceremony tied in with
and
it.
I think, but again, we have consultative groups that have to be consulted, and I think what happened with Charlie Flanagan is he didn't consult those groups, or in one case, as was reported in the media, he ignored the recommendation of one of those. This was a solo run. I'm not exactly sure what it was that Minister Flanagan was trying to achieve with this. If it was controversy, he certainly got that.
John?
I think it was a setback to efforts to have a good commemoration, which would feed into things which shaped this state, which would feed into our contemporary politics in a positive way. To me, it amounted to a small tip of the historical hat to our first legitimate national police forces. Now, ironically, I mean, it's disappointing to hear what Louise has to say there, because, I mean, how in the love of God are we going to manage next year? What are we going to do about the founding of Stormont? Are we going to pretend outright the politicians in this jurisdiction spent the bulk of a century trying to undo Stormont in its way? Is the Taoiseach going to be in Stormont to commemorate the opening of Stormont in 1921? How in the love of God are we going to manage the atrocities of the Civil War? And it's strange. There's Louise. I read a good speech by Maurice Quinlan, Quinlivan, the Limerick City TD. Sinn Féin
TD.
At the Sean South of Gary Owen commemorations last Sunday. And his focus was about national unity. How can we have national unity if we cannot even acknowledge what were police forces for the guts of a century? Police forces, to this day and the world over, are never universally popular, and there are always incidents. But they moved through a sea change of politics on this island, and they by the time the thing had pivoted, they were all on the wrong side.
Gerard Howland, how can this, or can this event be retrieved?
Well, I think there has to be some reflection as to whether Irish nationalism is fundamentally partitionist or not. Because the RIC, in part, and it was a complex organisation over a very long time, in part, was engaged in a fairly brutal rearguard action against insurrectionist nationalism to preserve the Union. Much more recently, you can say, in part, that's what the RUC was doing as well. But the point of the RIC and the RUC is that both had very substantial support on this island as a whole. Now, unless you want to take a partitionist view and write that significant degree of support on the island as a whole for both of them in their own time, I'm not sure what claim you have to any form of unity at all.
I think it's rather unhelpful that Louise would comment that you can't separate the Black and Tans from the RIC. I mean, I think we all know that they were brought in from elsewhere and they were mercenaries, and that nobody's denying the horror that was inflicted. But, you know, there's a line in South Pacific, you've got to be taught to hate and fear. And I think it's how, you know, you've got to be carefully taught. And you think of how all of us were brought up and how things diminish over time. And I just think the day for the Sinn Féin binary idea that you would either be on one side or another, the partitionist view, whatever view you want to have, that is not constructive to the future. It has failed in the past, and all it has done has wrought havoc on people's lives, and you have the fruits of it. But the way I look at it is, and the way my party looks at it is, we are, and I would love to see a united Ireland, but not the way you want it, and not the sort of language that ye have used this week to inflame this argument. Mary Lou called for protests. Protests for water is one thing. Protests in this political frame.
Mary Lou called for a protest, and there's no such thing as a peaceful protest, Kate, was significantly more popular than the call for that commemoration, and that is a simple fact. It is not
we're
true
trying to bring
to
people
say,
okay, with us.
It is not true to say that talk of Irish unity necessarily has to be divisive. It can be inclusive.
Those educational classes might come in handy.
We have to have that discussion.
John Downing, we saw record figures yet again, people waiting in hospital trolleys up towards for beds for admission. Up over 760 per day in the early days of this week. Now, it fell after that. Mm. Is the problem that there's no solution?
Well, there's a huge political, I keep saying this, is a huge political defeatism surrounds the problems of the health service. Mind you, vast swathes of the health service are not bad at all and work reasonably well, but the pinch points and A&E, it's a huge issue. It's an annual event. It's an all-time high. The risk all the time is that it's also the disruption, you know, to the greater health service by cancelling so-called routine or elective procedures. To me, that in turn risks reversing progress made in Irish public health in recent years. Various indicators tell us that. Politically, it's very inconvenient for Fine Gael heading into an election, but I'm not sure this one is going to be entirely fatal. Awkward, but not necessarily fatal, because of the political defeatism which always surrounds the issue of health. Now, housing would be entirely a different matter.
Yeah, Kate O'Connell, you spoke before Christmas about your embarrassment, I think, as a Fine Gael TD, from your experience of being, I think it was in Crumlin with a child. There's no great prospect of things improving. Well, OK, there will be the National Children's Hospital if we're prepared to wait. We do have to wait for it for another maybe 3 or 4 years. But, you know, in the short term, there's really no great hope.
Yeah, I mean, in ways, it's a perfect storm. We have huge demographic pressures, attendance up 200 persons per day in recent years. We've had the loss of many professionals, as we know, and we've spent many meetings at the Health Committee discussing workforce planning, the huge deficit of frontline staff. However, now where the conditions are better, we have committed to 1,000 more consultants. We have a new pay contract, 252,000 on the table for a public-only contract. We're recruiting nurses, but also we're investing in our capital infrastructure, the Children's Hospital, as you mentioned, the new maternity hospital, things that have been neglected for years. We have a crumbling infrastructure. We have a stripped staff in terms of expertise in our health service, and we have demographic pressures. But like that, we knew that the flu was coming. It has been particularly bad. The trolley numbers are down again today. I'm not saying it's acceptable. It is very, very difficult for people on trolleys, but we are sending in resources through the work of frontline professionals. The numbers are down, and hopefully we've reversed the upward trend today.
And 200 extra beds as well, the Minister reminded us.
Yeah, there was 199 extra beds announced, every single one of which is going to close on the 31st of March, so make of that what you will. The trolley numbers very rarely, if ever, go below 500, and yet on the 31st of March the Minister's going to take 199 beds out of the system. I have the figures there in front of me. Every single one of them has a closure date of the 31st of March 2020. So it's short-termism, it's 9 years of Fine Gael in government, and I absolutely accept that they inherited a crisis in healthcare as given to them by the previous Fianna Fáil government. The recruitment embargo that was in place has been continued by Fine Gael, and in the midst of a recruitment and retention crisis, putting a recruitment embargo in place and ensuring that staff cannot be hired is only going to put further pressure. I cannot imagine the pressure that the staff are under. I have spoken to them, I've spoken to some of them in tears. They are dealing with the absolute business end of Fine Gael policies. That's 9 years of Fine Gael in government,
Gerard,
has brought us
Gerard
to this.
Gerard Howland, just to go back to something John Dowling suggested there, that maybe housing is going to is a subject on which the government is more vulnerable than health.
Yes, certainly I think from a Fine Gael perspective, because you know, on a very good day, best outcome for Fine Gael is about a third of the vote. I'd say about 40% of people will consider voting for Fine Gael. Significantly fewer will actually do so. They're overwhelmingly people who are a little better off than the mainstream. Many of them have private health insurance. There's a different economic and social profile to an extent. And I think housing is a much bigger issue, because you're looking at people who bought their own house, whose parents bought their own house, who are working in largely in good jobs, who are well educated and do not accept with anger that their children, who are now in their 20s and 30s, cannot buy their home. Yeah. That is an issue.
In some instances, that their children are back living with them in overcrowded accommodation.
Yeah. Okay, look, we're going to leave it there for now, for this week. No doubt we'll talk about it again whenever the election is called. My thanks to you all, John Downing of The Independent, Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin Deputy for Dublin Fine Gael and Spokesperson on Health, and Gerard Howland, Public Affairs Consultant and Columnist with the Irish Examiner.